This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to this CIO market update from LGIM. I'm Max Julius, Head of Content, and I'm delighted to be joined by Sonia Loud, CIO, Ed Wicks, Head of Trading, and Guy Whitby-Smith, Head of Solutions Portfolio Management. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the pod.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, we've recently seen declines in risk assets and another lurch higher in government bond yields as central banks try to tame rampant inflation, with the Fed, of course, deliberating as we speak and the ECB holding an unscheduled meeting right now. So with no further ado, Sonia, we've recently seen declines in risk assets and another lurch higher in government bond yields as central banks try to tame rampant inflation, with the Fed, of course, deliberating as we speak and the ECB holding an unscheduled meeting. So with no further ado, Sonia, what do you make of this moment of market turbulence and growing investor anxiety?
Thanks, Max, and good morning, everyone. I think you've highlighted the most important points already. It is the inflation situation that continues to rattle markets, and we've been talking about this ever since the beginning of the year, but it's very clear that this initial idea of a peak in inflation in the first half of 22 now seems rather unlikely, and that we are going to see much more of a plateau emerging. And very clearly, this is supported by a broadening of inflationary data. So not just, you know, goods inflation on the basis of supply chain disruption, and clearly not just energy driven on the back of the geopolitical situation. We have seen obviously upside pressure on wage inflation, on services. Airfares are up 13%. So a broadening that clearly worries central banks and has led to a shift with regards to communication, a shift with regards to expectation when it comes to the magnitude of the individual rate hikes. And clearly, this is no longer just a US story. I think what has happened over the past week in particular is the inflation prints in Europe, and hence the volatility and rises in bond yields and spreads has been very much centered in Europe. And hence, as you've just said, the ECB is meeting today on an ad hoc basis because they're worried about the volatility. And there is now expectation that even the ECB has to accelerate the rate hike cycle, has to enhance and increase the actual increase per meeting. And that's a big shift. And again, it's just a reflection of the speed with which we have to adjust to new data points coming in and have to adjust the level of monetary tightening that will be needed in order to rein in those inflationary pressures. That has been at the core of what's currently been happening. And as I said, it's particularly been the shift from the US focus towards Europe and the acceptance that clearly this is a broad-based phenomenon that we're witnessing, and the idea that the peak is by no means here yet. And I think we have to stress, as always, this is historic material. We're looking at obviously inflation prints in the US of 8.6% year over year. That is the highest since December 1981. And so again, hence the understanding why markets are so nervous about this. And we had similar seeing the UK and Europe following in lockstep. And obviously then from a markets point of view, not only is trying to digest that level of monetary tightening, but it questions again whether a soft landing is possible or whether in fact we have to bring forward the expectations for a recession. And that clearly is probably what rattles equity markets the most, because we can see the rationale and the reason why the bond market is adjusting. But we normally would expect equity markets actually to do quite well in that last part of the cycle. But given the level of uncertainty and the potential to see the recession happening sooner than expected has weighed on equity markets to a very large degree.
Thank you very much for that overview, Sonia. And this is a great point to bring Ed into the call. Ed, of course, you've got a front row seat on all of the associated market activity alongside this fast-changing backdrop. The last time you were on LGIM Talks was at the start of the Ukraine conflict back in February. How has market functioning and liquidity evolved since then?
Thanks, Max, and good morning, everyone. I think it's important just to start by saying, you know, this is an incredibly challenging time for markets, as we've just heard from Sonia. There's really not a lot of positivity out there, as you can expect. I think the last few sessions have been particularly challenging, albeit we're a little bit better off today as we open a bit firmer. Now, economic data, most notably inflation, does continue, I think, to spook the markets. And it's really interesting when you think back, you know, a few months ago, we were using this word transitory quite a lot, and that seems to quite quickly have sort of disappeared from the lexicon, if you like. But I think the inflationary picture, allied to those geopolitical tensions that we've heard about, has had a really profound impact on markets. So from where we're sitting on the trading desk, we're seeing, you know, volatility continue to trend higher as measured by the VIX. We're seeing this persistent continuing strengthening of the US dollar as it takes on the status of a safe haven asset. And perhaps most worryingly, we're seeing a lot of fragility in terms of liquidity across asset classes. It's probably worth just delving a little bit more into that liquidity picture, because it is interesting to see how quickly the sort of picture is changing. So if you look at markets that have order books, so things like cash equities, listed futures, things that have order books, very visible, everyone can look at those markets and see what's happening. What we're seeing in those markets is a pretty severe reduction in order book depth. And what we mean by that is, when it comes to buying or selling those securities, the actual amount of volume that's available at the best bid or the best offer is dramatically reduced from where it was 3-6 months ago. And that's a real big concern for us, because of course, if dealers can't hedge effectively, it means the prices that they make are not going to be on large positions. So that's on that type of market. If you then look across to fixed income markets, which tend to be slightly more opaque, and they work on an RFQ basis or a request for quotes basis, then what we're seeing in those markets is a more elevated and persistently elevated bid-offer spread. And the other thing that we're seeing is, when it comes to actually transacting, the levels at which you can transact are actually outside of the optical bid offer that is being shown on the screen, which is another obvious sign of stress. And then perhaps the last thing that we're picking up on those types of RFQ, request for quote markets, is that dealers are taking just a little bit longer to start pricing sizes. And that's another good indication of stress in the market and uncertainty. I would say, fortunately, all those things that I've just discussed are only having a very modest impact on transaction costs currently. But of course, it's something we keep under review almost constantly. And then if I think to the rest of this week, we've spoken a little bit about all the central bank activities that's coming. But we've got a very busy trading week as well. What we're going to see at the end of this week is quarterly derivative expiries, and we're going to see the indices rebalance as well. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the markets deal with that level of activity post the central bank announcements.
All right, well, thanks for that perspective, Ed. And I'll just jump in here with an obvious follow-up question, which is, how is the trading team navigating these somewhat challenging conditions?
Well, if the last comment that I made was slightly negative, this is a lot more positive, which is great, in the sense that we're actually managing to navigate these markets pretty well. And there's a few reasons for that. I guess one of the sort of data points we can point to is that our volumes year on year across all asset classes are up 8-9%. So we're actually catering for larger volume this year in this environment, and we're doing it very successfully. Now, the trading team is a very experienced team. There's a number of individuals that have seen various cycles in the market. They've worked on both the buy side and sell side. And I think that is a big ingredient of our success. We've got sort of traders that have seen these markets or similar markets before. But when it comes to how we think about navigating these sort of more difficult and challenging markets ahead, one of the levers that we pull is our relationships. We're obviously a very large asset manager trading a very, very large amount of activity on a daily basis. And our traders are spending a lot of time making sure that those relationships they have with our core counterparties are working appropriately. And that means, are we getting the level of service we require? Are we getting access to the balance sheet that we require, et cetera? So relationships is something that can't be denied in terms of being an important factor, as well as the existing relationships. Of course, it's important that the traders are evaluating potentially new relationships if we have gaps that we feel that we need to fill. But perhaps one of the most important factors that helps us to navigate these markets is technology. I've spoken about technology before on these calls, and there's a couple of things that I would highlight at the moment. First and foremost, we've been pretty successful over the last year or so of moving our trading technology forward. So we've implemented a new order management system for our OTC derivatives, and that helps us develop a more efficient and effective trading process for our OTC derivatives, which is really important in these markets. And then the other way that we're using trading technology is to increase the level of automation that we're able to achieve. And that means for very low value orders across all asset classes, we're effectively automating that activity. And what that does, it gives the traders valuable time back in their trading day to really focus on those higher value inputs and help our portfolio managers and clients navigate these challenging markets. So those are two aspects I would point to. And perhaps just the last one briefly that I would mention is internalization. As a large-scale asset manager, we obviously have a good amount of trading activity for both passive type accounts and active accounts. And we're able to actually achieve very high internalization rates, which is really super important in these markets, particularly when it comes to asset classes with wider spreads, for example, because we're obviously crossing at the midpoint. And that's a real differentiator if you get it right.
Thanks, Ed. That's a reassuring note for our clients amid the market uncertainty and volatility, in particular at that point you make about the marriage of human relationships and automation there. Let's turn to Guy now. Guy, how has the repricing of the macro and policy outlook and associated market volatility affected sterling rates and inflation markets?
Thanks, Max. Yeah, and good morning, everyone. Well, yes, it certainly is a very sort of fast-changing environment, and it really has, you know, as Ed just alluded to, produced some of the most volatile market conditions that we've really witnessed in recent times. I think I'll probably start by addressing that by talking about inflation. Interestingly, to hear sort of Sonia and Ed start an inflation story as well, it really just shows how much that is really dominating the narrative at the moment. Sonia gave us some numbers on US inflation. If we look at the UK, actually, it's amazing sort of how similar things are if just a little bit higher here in the UK. So for instance, in RBI here, we continue to see sort of surprises on the upside sort of month on month. In April, the last piece of inflation data we got, we had 11.1% in RPI, which was, you know, the highest level in 40 years, you know, akin to those 40-year highs in the US as well. And it's set to continue to rise in the coming months. What's more, you know, RPI is expected to stay in double digits for the rest of 2022. So this conversation about it being transitory really is now very much in the rearview mirror. Inflation is sort of really become entrenched. We've seen that in the last round of wage negotiations. And because obviously there's a lot in the news at the moment about, you know, potential, you know, across a lot of industries pushing for higher wages across a lot of sectors. So it's very challenging conditions for the Bank of England in terms of trying to rein in those expectations. So all of this really sort of forcing on the interest rate side, so the Bank of England have to act fast. It started as one of the first central banks to sort of stop QE and start rising rates right at the end of last year. But really, I mean, it's got a long way to go. Well, really, now we're sort of expecting to see the largest series of interest rate hikes since the 1980s. You know, the base rate is now being expected to peak in the UK at sort of 3.5% next year. And I guess it's easy to forget that just last year, just a few months ago, we were at 0.1% in the UK. So we really have, you know, we've got a long way to go to if we're going to get all the way up to those levels next year. In terms of the impact that's having on interest rate markets, well, it's producing a sort of same sell-off in rates, I guess, as you'd expect. I guess really interestingly, not just in those shorter maturities where obviously it's going to be most impacted by changing the policy rate, but at longer maturities as well. So if you look at sort of things like 30-year nominal yields, 30-year real yields here in the UK, in both those markets, I mean, we've seen rates go up by over 1.5% this year, taking both of those markets to sort of over 6-year highs. And it's, I guess, not just looking at the distance of the move, but I guess the volatility and how the market's sort of experiencing and digesting those moves. It's doing it in an incredibly volatile way. I mean, just to give a couple of examples, just yesterday, we saw long-dated real yields move by 15 basis points in just 2 hours of trading. And a couple of weeks ago, we saw a 25 basis point move in a single afternoon. I guess there's a lot of factors for that. And I guess one of the big ones really is this sort of lack of QE, lack of the central bank buying of sort of government bonds, which I think the market's really got used to sort of sitting and having that sort of backstop buyer that would come in week after week and always would buy if no one else was. We just don't have that anymore, which means that we can see these much larger moves than we've got used to experiencing in interest rates. And particularly we've seen that in the UK, but I think we'll obviously likely see that in Europe, and obviously as their quantitative easing programme also winds down. Then if we just look at credit spreads, it gets a very sort of similar story. You know, throughout this year, we've seen since the start of the year, credit spreads widened by around sort of 70 basis points. And again, you know, keep repeating myself, but that's taken ourselves to levels that we've not seen since 2016, barring just kind of a handful of weeks during the peak levels of the pandemic. I guess all this really does create opportunities for clients, particularly if sort of around pension schemes that typically find themselves sort of short on rates, sort of short on credit. And we're certainly starting to see some schemes sort of trying to take advantage of that, either increasing hedge ratio levels and interest rates or moving more into credit, but not yet in anything like enough numbers to really even sort of hold, let alone reverse this market trend.
Thanks, Guy. Yes, big moves in both rates and credit right across the curve, as you say. Mm-hmm. Of course, you mentioned that the Bank of England, I'd be remiss not to note that the BOE is due to make another policy decision tomorrow. What's the market pricing in, and does this seem reasonable to you?
This is a very busy time for central banks, really, across the globe. There are three meetings in the space of sort of just over 24 hours just at the moment. I guess I'm looking just at the UK. Yeah, I guess the market's expecting a 25 basis point hike, so that would take rates in the UK to 1.25%. I think we think that seems reasonable. I mean, you'd have to say a 50 basis point hike certainly can't be ruled out. Now, I guess they're going to see what the Fed does tonight, which is likely to be at least 50. I'm sure that will be at least at the back of their minds when they need to make that decision. So we certainly expect to see at least some MPC members sort of voting for a 50 basis point hike. But yeah, I think 25 is the most likely outcome. You know, the Bank of England sort of started raising rates earlier than others, and I think to some extent feels like that helps them sort of moderate the pace to an extent. And also, I guess the Bank of England, it's true of all central banks, but particularly probably had one of the most tricky positions, because it's probably the UK probably has the most acute inflationary pressures right now of the major economies, and sort of weakening sterling certainly isn't helping that. But also, sort of as Sonia noted just then, you know, we're seeing sort of those recession fears building, we're seeing some of the data turning, and again, probably sort of earlier in the UK than perhaps we're seeing in some of the other markets. So it really is a very sort of tight path that they have to navigate between trying to rein in those inflation expectations that are starting to sort of get unbounded, but at the same time, getting that right in terms of the pace that the economy can actually take it. And also just seeing the impact of the rate hikes that they've already done come through. I mean, there's quite a lot of talk about in things like the UK mortgage market, where people have termed out mortgages for longer than they used to. But I guess that insulates the sort of the man on the street from rate hikes in the short term, but it does mean ultimately mortgages will still roll and those impacts will feed through. It just means there's more of a lag, which is particularly tricky for something like the Bank of England, where having long lags in policy means that it doesn't yet know the impact of the 1% of our hikes that we've already done, but it's still contemplating another sort of 2-2.5% hikes on top of that. It's very, very hard to get that right.
Tough time to be a central banker right now. Sonia, you talked about market scepticism earlier regarding a potential soft landing for the economy. How do we as a house see the risk of a recession evolving, and how might this affect the investment decisions we make to meet our clients' objectives?
Yes, thanks, Max. And I think that's a very important question, because I think if you consider what we would call a typical cycle and the way the market would look at the onset of a rate hiking cycle and when then the recession or a slowdown in the economy would occur, normally is a very good period for risk assets. Normally we would expect equities actually to fare the best in that last part of the cycle. And I would like to start with that because clearly this is not what we are currently seeing. And hence, you know, we have to consider pretty much everything that both Guy and Ed have already highlighted, because clearly this is not the normal end to a cycle, right? I mean, the speed with which the market had to adjust to inflationary pressures, not only emerging, but then broadening out, and then obviously needing central banks to change their communication and their strategic view on interest rates, literally on a very short meeting by meeting basis, means that markets are simply looking at a level of uncertainty that is not commensurate with what we would normally expect. Now, the onset of a recession or the potential for a soft landing clearly seems ever more unlikely the more interest rate hikes and the magnitude of hikes we're going to see. The expectation for the US still is for the second half of next year. So actually would leave sufficient space for risk assets at least to recover, because that means that economic growth is still positive until then. Because if we think about the normal definition of a recession, I think the most commonly used is that a technical recession is when you have two consecutive quarters of negative growth. Now, I've highlighted that the UK had just 1 month, and that still doesn't make a technical recession. Clearly, what we would look at is the labour market reaction to the rate hiking cycle. And we would obviously look at the magnitude of slowdown, because clearly, if your starting point is very high, very often a recession would be constituted if you have a dramatic slowdown, even if economic growth overall remains positive. So as I said, the US, our expectation is still for the second half of next year. And here in Europe and the UK, clearly the impact of the geopolitical situation, i.e. as long as the war in Ukraine is ongoing, the potential for a recession to happen earlier literally increases with the length of the invasion. And that is mostly related, one, because of the proximity of the war to Europe, and B, because obviously the energy-led cost of living crisis hits Europe and the UK much harder than the US, and this is simply linked to the energy pricing mechanism and the way it hits the consumer. So there's a lot to digest, and this is why I think the understanding of those factors, and hence the evolution of those factors, will continue to evolve, and it will continue to drive our view of a recession. But the problem this time, and this is why I've started with this, is because that is not a normal end to the cycle. Investor positioning has to, you know, incorporate that level of uncertainty, and as such, probably look at it more from a tactical standpoint, because as Guy has already highlighted, we're seeing big swings, not only on a daily basis, but we've seen big moves in terms of credit spreads, in terms of rates, and with regards to equities. So you might actually start to look for opportunities where potentially the market adjustment process has gone beyond what we think actually is the path of our expectations. And you could start looking for potential opportunities, but it will probably not be your expected blueprint of an end of cycle asset class return profile. And it's more looking for, for asset classes where the adjustment process has gone beyond, and that from a sentiment and valuation standpoint, we might find areas to invest. But having said that, obviously the caveat is exactly the uncertainty that we've highlighted, and we will probably get more information and more insight, not only from the Fed today, from the ECB today, and from the Bank of England tomorrow, because there's obviously been a lot of speculation whether we might even see a 75 basis point hike in order to address what now obviously is far more persistent inflationary pressures. And I think that, again, will hopefully allow the market to establish a better market pricing mechanism and investors the opportunity to find areas of a bit of an overshooting and good value.
Thanks for that, Sonia. Luckily, we'll be here every month to check in with our clients and listeners and outline our thinking as that macro environment evolves. Ed, coming back to you, in addition to trading, you also help oversee our liquidity strategies. How is the team seeking to optimize returns from money markets and also mitigate the risks in this rising rates environment?
Yeah, thanks, Max. So, I mean, look, we're obviously entering a period of far steeper rate hikes, as we've heard, than was previously envisaged. And of course, the transmission through to the money market curve is a highly correlated thing. But perhaps before we talk about how we're mitigating risks and positioning, et cetera, I think it is important just to set out the mandate of liquidity funds, which is twofold. And that is to provide daily liquidity and to provide daily capital stability. Two important points just to make at the outset. But look, given what's happening in markets, given what's happening with rates, there are several actions that we think would make sense for money market funds. The first one is obviously to stay highly liquid in the front end. That's a really important thing to make sure that you're achieving. And there's a couple of reasons for that, because if you're highly liquid in the front end, it allows you almost instantly to benefit from any rate increases, because the transmission of those rate increases into the instruments that you're holding in the form of deposits and reverse repo instruments is incredibly swift. So that's an important point to note. The other aspect, while we're talking about those type of instruments that I think is important, is we're seeing a lot more of a robust market when it comes to reverse repo markets. And they're markets that have been really challenged in a lower interest rate environment, interestingly. So it makes sense from a positioning and a risk mitigation perspective, but also the market is more robust in that in terms of where it was some time ago. So that's the first thing that we'd probably say. The other thing that would make sense is to think about tilting the allocations towards more of a variable rate note structure. Again, the reason for doing something like that would simply be that that's another layer of protection from interest rate rises. And of course, that's one of the key things we're trying to protect us against. And then finally, probably if you think about where we are in the tightening cycle, I think it's probably fair to assume that we're in the relatively early stages of the tightening cycle, having listened to Sonia and Guy. Then you want to start thinking about allocating further out along the curve, but you want to do that incrementally. And so I think over time, it's going to make sense to start allocating to that longer part of the curve. But given everything we've heard and our own analysis, we don't think we're quite there yet.
Good. Well, thanks for that. Guy, I'm going to ask you a very similar question, which is, what did this backdrop mean for how we manage LDI strategies? You've talked about some of the opportunities earlier. What are the risks?
Yeah, thanks, Max. Good question. For us, this backdrop really has really, really big implications for LDI strategies. Particularly around sort of this increased volatility. And we're really sort of approaching this both as a risk, I guess, and as an opportunity. Maybe firstly, as we said, I'll sort of cover that risk side first, but I think it's very important to have this sort of front and center of mind. Really be very, very mindful of collateral. I mean, if you look at LDI strategies, I mean, they've been really being set up over the last 10 or 15 years. Pretty much throughout that time, we've pretty much had, a kind of a strong sort of rally in yields and in rates. So LDI strategies have pretty much invariably been generating sort of surplus collateral, which has then sort of LDI clients, pension schemes have been able to invest in other parts of their portfolio. But that really has reversed this year. We've just gone through the numbers earlier in this call, but really the impact of these rising rates is to completely flip that on its head. And now collateral is being needed in LDI strategies, all that collateral that was paid out, so needing to get returned. I think particularly we've seen that so far really just in the most leveraged LDI strategies, which have so far needed to get more collateral. But really, if over the coming months we continue to see sort of further sell-off in rates, more and more LDI portfolios are going to need to have sort of collateral sort of paid back into them to counteract the move in rates. I guess the message would really say is by far the most straightforward way to kind of navigate this is to ensure that your LDI manager has other assets they can draw on sort of when needed. This really simplifies the governance aspects of it, allows us to raise the cash and get that where it needs to be in the LDI portfolio, really at short notice. And when noting some of the big, the volatility and some of the big moves we can get in single days or even in single afternoons, being able to act quickly is absolutely key. So I'd say that's the risk side of it. And then if we sort of look at the other, the sort of flip side of it, which is, okay, so yeah, what's the opportunity? I sort of touched on that to an extent earlier, but just to go into a bit more sort of detail around that. So really, we really feel like there's a real opportunity for pension schemes to be able to sort of set themselves up to sort of benefit from this increased volatility, almost harvest the volatility, and sort of use it to their advantage so that they're in a position to act really quickly as market conditions change. I think it's really striking. If you look across a range of the key metrics of pension schemes, so for, you know, whether it's, you know, interest rate hedging, so interest rate levels, whether it's switching into credit, so, you know, credit spreads as well as the, you know, outright interest rates, whether it's sort of switching out of growth assets into matching assets, or ultimately if it's looking at that kind of that sort of final step, that sort of buyout step. I guess across all these metrics, you know, the current environment, the levels are pretty much as attractive as they've been for many, many years. And indeed, if you look at sort of buyout levels, you know, funding levels are all-time highs for pension schemes. So I guess, you know, how can pension schemes benefit from that? I guess, well, first and foremost, so they need to be aware of it. So that starts with monitoring. I mean, they need to be monitoring this, and we're able to, for clients, monitoring these levels sort of daily. So, you know, so the clients have got the information they need to make informed decisions and fast decisions. Then, you know, then next step on that, layering on that, is potentially it's sort of having trigger levels, and, you know, whether those are informal trigger levels or effectively sort of codified into the mandate. So again, it simplifies the governance and would allow us to take advantage of those opportunities that sometimes can appear just for a few hours when the market can really get quite disjointed and be able to act very fast. And I guess really, sort of in this way, pension schemes can really be able to sort of lock into some of these gains that they're experiencing and actually use this volatility to their advantage.
Great. Well, thank you very much for that, Guy. Sonia, as always, we've covered a huge amount of ground. What are the key takeaways for investors here? And is there anything you'd like to add?
I think it's fair to say, and we have done so before, the understanding of the inflection point that against the backdrop of, you know, historic inflation prints will really lead to a fundamental shift in markets. And I think that's been very clear throughout everything we have said today. There has to be an understanding as well that the adjustment process not only will come with a lot of volatility, and we have seen obviously those in pockets arising, but that there is an ongoing evolution of the understanding in how that regime shift will go into manifest itself. And in particular, and this is what Guy has said, you know, how far will interest rates have to rise before they will have the desired effect in slowing down the economy? Guys talked about the mortgage market in particular. Overall, what we would look for is the interest rate sensitivity of an economy. And I think there has been obviously a lot of debate because of the level of debt that we have seen created. But obviously, again, it's about the nature and the maturity of that debt that will give you an indication how far we might have to see interest rates rise before they have the desired effect. Obviously, the potential for further surprises, and it has the potential for more volatility because, again, as we said, there's a time lag between the actual rate hike and the effect it has on the real economy. And it might just require even higher rates than currently anticipated. That always will lead to further adjustment processes. And then obviously at the end of the day, when we approach the end of 22 into 23, is this idea soft landing or recession. And I'm pretty sure that here in Europe, we might test this first before it comes to the US. Sentiment is very fragile. There's a lot of uncertainty. We have seen huge swings. We have seen huge adjustment processes. And I think just repeating to what I've said before, there is potential to look at this from a tactical standpoint. But we would only obviously engage at a tactical level when there's a clear understanding of the big goalposts, i.e. inflation, interest rate hikes, and a potential recession, because that will be your fundamental drivers of market returns. But given the level of uncertainty, there's always an opportunity that the market overshoots and hence can present a trading opportunity. And finishing off, as our listeners will know, understanding the structural trends that emerge from 2 years of pandemic, geopolitical shifts, will always create opportunities for long-term investment positions. But that, again, has to be considered in the context of obviously a very fragile market mood, and hence obviously the risk of further obviously downside in the interim.
Right. So fragility, uncertainty, with both risks and opportunities in a very fast moving situation. Well, finally, I'd just like to ask you all what you've been watching, reading or listening to, if you've had any time to do that, that is. I'll get the ball rolling. So I read a book called Collapse about the fall of communism. Really interesting, lots of relevant insights for today. Sonia, what have you been consuming of late?
A bit more lighthearted. I've been flying to Chicago to visit our office there. And on the way out, I've been watching two movies. One was The Duke with Jim Broadbent and Helen Mirren, which was just fabulous and is actually highly recommendable. And slightly on a more serious note, I watched Nomadland, which I know is not new and obviously has won the Oscars, I don't know, last year or the year before, but again, a fabulous movie, can highly recommend both. And it's a nice mix of something a tad more serious versus something very lighthearted.
Thank you. Ed?
I was also traveling to Chicago last week and I took the opportunity to finally read a book I've had on the shelf for years, and it's called Prisoners of Geography by Tim Marshall. It's really, really interesting and gives a good appreciation of geopolitics. So I found that quite insightful. I've not finished it yet, I must say. Alongside that, I'm just digesting reams of market commentary on a daily basis.
Good, as we would expect. Thank you, Ed. And Guy?
Phil, last few weeks, Phil, I've mostly been watching a fair bit of tennis, whether French Open a few weeks ago, obviously Queens this week. I guess for me, there's nothing like the combination of tennis and sort of sun outside to really get me in a summer mindset and to try to provide some kind of counterweight to what we're seeing on the red that we're seeing a lot of the screens when we're in the office.
Right, well, that's a lovely positive note on which to end this month's call. Thank you, Sonia, Ed and Guy, for your time today. Thank you to you, our clients and listeners, for joining us. Our next edition of the CIO call will be in July, when we'll focus on the outlook for emerging markets. In the meantime, you can find our latest updates via our social media channels, on the LGIM blog, and of course here on LGIM Talks.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating, or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous, on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording, and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties, and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions, and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security, and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website, lgim.com. Copyright 2021, Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, a licensed corporation, BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.